Hello again. This is Monitor. I'm Brad Crandall. Just ahead, an interview with an ex-convict who became a playwright while he was still in prison. First, Monitor Music. As you may know, singer Andy Williams is married to another singer named Claudine Langer. She's quite a beautiful young lady, too, which may have been the inspiration for the song Andy sings now, The Face I Love.
Just think of things like daffodils and peaceful sheep on clover hills, the morning song of whippoorwills, and you'll see the face that I love. Think of any old sky getting ready to cry. Down comes the rain, but it's raining confetti. And think of things like far-off isles, to blue-green eyes and sunlit smiles, and in your hand a wishing star, the one you thought too far above. Every lovely view introduces you to the face I love.
If you were sentenced to jail for life, how would you spend all that time, those hours and days that would have to be filled somehow? One convict, a lifer named Rick Clouchy, turned to the theater for rehabilitation, and it worked so well for him that he was recently paroled from San Quentin, where he had helped organize a workshop theater, and for which he wrote some 25 plays. One of his plays, The Cage, has been produced outside prison walls, and it was because of this that Rick Clouchy, who arrived at San Quentin in a sheriff's van almost a dozen years ago, left there recently in a Rolls Royce. Monitor's Bob Lazick asked Mr. Clouchy about his life in and out of prison and about the work he's been doing in behalf of other ex-convicts.
Rick, when you were in prison, you wrote a play while most other men are studying law and trying to figure out a way to get out. What makes you different, and why do you think that you wanted to write a play rather than study law?
I performed with them as an actor and a director, and the last couple of years of my association, which continued over a period of some 8.5 years, I began to write plays. And I hope that the play I did write and was produced professionally by the Actors Workshop in San Francisco in 1965 is in some respect a contribution to the drama in our country today.
Could you just sketch for me what that play is about?
It's about men in prison and the not the superficial or mechanical aspect of imprisonment, which is, of course, very dull and very routine. But it is the sort of inner dynamics, the inner man screaming out against his cage. And I try to depict the utter disintegration of a human being when alienated from his natural community. I think when we take man away from his natural community and place him in cages, and that's what it amounts to, then we destroy that man a little bit daily, day by day.
Now, since you've been out, are you making any effort to voice and express yourself in this regard on the outside?
Yes, I am, through the Seven Step Foundation, which is a non-profit organization formed by ex-felons who have established a certain amount of stability on the outside and are helping men who are leaving prison today. Like an alcoholic helping an alcoholic, well, why can't an ex-con help a con?
What do you do? What does the Seven Steps Foundation do?
It helps place men coming out of prison in worthwhile jobs and occupations and gives them a place to come to talk over their problems with people who understand those problems. There are 400,000 men and women in our prisons today. Now, the national statistic of recidivism is 8 out of 10 released return to prison. But under our program in the past 18 months here in California and 3 years nationally, started in Kansas with Bill Sands, of course, we have dramatically reversed this statistic. 8 out of 10 who leave prison through our program stay out, not return to prison. And I think that is part of the contribution we are making.
Now, why is it that a man does return to prison statistically so often?
I believe because, in my own experience, having left San Quentin only 11 days ago, I found that this society, this very affluent society we live in today, is a world apart from the world of prison itself. And I think that we must be aware that there are people in society who are really hostile towards men coming out of prison. Now, I wonder if this is in any way can be attributed, shall we say, to the stereotyped Hollywood version of a hard, tough convict. Well, perhaps it can, but our program is trying to re-educate the public, trying to show the public that men coming out of prison aren't all bad and that they should be given a chance.
Well, Rick, how about yourself? How do you think your adjustment is going to hold up? It's only been a few weeks.
I try to prepare myself for that inside San Quentin with the Seven Step Foundation. We operate in the prison as well as in free society. And part of our training is called a pre-release class, which allows us to focus on freedom and what it means. And we have seven steps, which were drawn up by convicts for other convicts to live by. And it's a reality-orientated program stressing realistic thinking. We devise the steps, which number one goes something like this. Facing the truth about ourselves and the world around us, we decided we needed to change. This is certainly a very dynamic statement in itself. And once a man can face the truth, I think he's better prepared to meet society.
Thank you very much, Rick Clucci, a man who is an ex-convict who is apparently not going back. Now, this is Bob Lazich in San Francisco, returning you to Monitor.
Rick Clucci, an ex-convict who returned to society through the theater. Now, one of the real professionals in the music business, Miss Margaret Whiting, to sing a song with a hopeful title, Somewhere There's Love. Listening to the swinging sound of Monitor 67. Coming up, an interview with playwright Harold Pinter, one of Britain's angry young men, and some say an exponent of the so-called dirty school of playwriting. So stay with us. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Hello, this is Brad Crandall for Monitor. And to kick off this segment, let's hear from the Arbors with Dreamer Girl.
Girl, have you found your everyone should find one special love. Dreamer girl, something strange.
Monitor's Man on the Isle, Leonard Probst.
From time to time, producer David Merrick gets mad at drama critics. He sometimes gets angry enough to threaten them, as he did last year with former New York Times drama critic Stanley Kaufman, when he warned Kaufman he would go at his peril if he tried to attend a Merrick show before opening night. Kaufman arrived at the theater, and Merrick canceled a preview performance. Earlier this season, Merrick announced that my colleague at NBC News, Edwin Newman, was not, in Merrick's opinion, competent and stopped sending Newman opening night tickets. This week, Merrick added me to the list for rather novel reasons. Merrick recently announced he respects my play reviews, and until this week, his press agent has called to use quotes from reviews on Monitor when I've been favorable to a Merrick show. However, I was not sent tickets for the newest Merrick production, The Astrakhan Coat, which opened Thursday night. A spokesman for Merrick told me, "It's not that he has anything against you, but I think he is preparing some legal brief against NBC critics." In any case, it had Merrick at the box office more than any other news organization, in that it is now buying opening night tickets for both Newman and me, while other reviewers get in on press seats. Also, it should be noted that RCA is one of the principal investors in David Merrick Productions. As for the new play, The Astrakhan Coat, it's meant to be a suspense murder mystery, but it starts with an empty, dreary stage, and the void is seldom filled. The story is precious but not plausible. The Astrakhan Coat is well-tailored to a so far mediocre season. The best drama I've seen on Broadway so far this season is Harold Pinter's The Homecoming. Mr. Pinter is considered among the finest playwrights now writing. In the play The Homecoming, the wife of an English professor is brought back to the family's home in London, and she turns from, apparently, from being a member with standing in a intellectual community into becoming a harlot quite readily.
No, that's not true. She does not become a harlot. What evidence do you have that she becomes a harlot?
In the play, she rolls on the couch with one of the brothers.
That is not the activity of a harlot, because there are millions of women in this very country, and I'm sure in New York at this very moment, rolling off couches with their brothers or cousins or next-door neighbors. And really, most respectable women do this. In fact, every woman I've ever known has done this. It's a little curious, certainly when your husband's looking on, but it doesn't mean that you're a harlot.
I think that's what the play is saying, at least as I saw it, that there is this desire in all of us, or in all women, but to go on with your own play...
No, can I please say, I wonder, you've seen the play yourself, and you've noticed at this particular moment, the actress preserves not only when she's about to roll off the sofa or get on the sofa or whatever it is, an enormous gravity and seriousness and sadness and almost loss and disinterest in what she is in fact doing. One of the points of production, which we discussed very early on, that there was nothing sexy in this action. It was an action taken because there was nothing else that she could possibly do at the time. There was nothing else really worth doing. She didn't want to go back to America with her husband. She might as well roll off the sofa. That's the way I rather see it. In other words, I'm saying that the character of the woman possesses a certain kind of despair.
But it seems, in looking at your plays and other British plays, that there's a purposeful desire to disturb, annoy, irritate, upset the audience. To shake them up.
No, look, I can only speak for myself. And the great thing about writing plays is find something. Something happens on a page for me, on page one. Then I get on to page two, and by the time I'm on to page three, I've got a kind of feeling of what kind of people I am supposed to be writing about here. No one's told me, they tell me, and then I tell them. We have a dual kind of relationship altogether. And that's my main interest. Whatever happens in the play happens. And I suppose, therefore, you must attribute violence in my plays to me, finally. But I assure you, it's finding the characters that is the great excitement of writing and allowing them to speak for themselves, to live.
Harold Pinter's people are unpredictable, and they do have a life of their own on stage, which is one reason they're fascinating to watch. Leonard Probst, NBC News, New York. That's it from Broadway.
According to astrologers, the day and date of your birth have a direct influence on the course of your life. And whether you believe this or not, you'll like Matt Monroe's latest, Wednesday's Child.
Wednesday's child is a child of woe. Wednesday's child cries alone, I know. When you smiled just for me, you smiled for a while. I forgot I was Wednesday's child. Friday's child wins at love, they say. In your arms, Friday was my day. Now you're gone. Well, I should have known I am Wednesday's child, born to be to be alone, Wednesday's child, born to be alone.